Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, November 13th at 10:27 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like this week, former Congressman Tim Ryan will announce whether or not he will run for governor.
Well, we're waiting.
Never gets old. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who promise to never back down, and then they do, rather quickly. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the week does his job very well the day before the election. We'll explain. But first, one Democrat's compromise is another Democrat's cave. For the second time in about 2 weeks, Ohio Democrats saw their leaders compromise. First, Democrats on the Ohio Redistricting Commission compromised with Republicans and approved a redistricting map that could increase the number of GOP congresspeople representing the state. Their ardent supporters complained these Democrats on the commission caved, but they argued they got a better deal than they would have if they had voted no and allowed the supermajority Republican legislature to draw a map even more tilted to the GOP. And they have a point. It could have been worse. On Capitol Hill, on the other hand, a handful of Senate Democrats got very little for siding with Republicans to reopen the government. They had demanded that Republicans extend subsidies for Obamacare health insurance. They did not get that. Not even really close. They only got a promise to hold one vote in the Senate. Ohio House Democrats howled. Democrats Joyce Beatty said the Senate vote betrays the fight for the subsidies and the people who depend on them. Of course, Ohio's Senators John Husted and Bernie Marino, both Republican, claimed victory over the far-left Democrats who shut down the government. And just think, we get to have this fight all over again in January when this current spending package, temporary spending package, runs out of money. Of course, as the government reopened, Democrats, coincidentally, we'll get to another coincidence in a moment, but coincidentally, Democrats released a select few Jeffrey Epstein emails suggesting President Trump knew about Epstein's sex trafficking. The White House denies it, calling the release part of a distraction campaign. It is not wrong, but it now looks like Congress will vote soon on whether to support releasing all of the Epstein files. That will put Ohio Republican congressmen in a tough spot. Do they back their president, their party's president, and vote against the release? Or do they vote with many of their constituents who want to see the files? It's certainly worth watching. After the Democrats shut down cave, compromise, and the release of the Epstein emails, last week's election now seems like a distant memory. But, of course, it is not. Democrats in Ohio are trying to capitalize on big wins in New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, and Ohio Republicans are trying to learn if there are any lessons from those elections. Exit polls showed younger voters were very enthusiastic. Voters of color seemed to come back to support Democratic candidates, and the polls indicate that voters are not happy with the way the economy is going, and they blame President Trump. Republican candidate for Governor Vivek Ramaswamy said his party needs to refocus.
Our side needs to focus on affordability. Make the American dream affordable. Bring down costs, electric costs, grocery costs, healthcare costs, and housing costs, and lay out how we're going to do it.
To dissect the implications of the distant memory of Democrats' success and look at how Ohioans voted on higher taxes for government services in this month's election, we welcome our panel of experts, State House reporters Laura Bischoff of the USA Today Ohio Bureau and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio, as well as Democrat Joe Mass and Republican Mike Miller.
Mike Miller, is he right? Have Republicans gotten away from the economy as a primary issue? Well, I think what he's saying is he thinks the economy means a great deal, and I think it does too, so he wants to highlight it. And all these things are great. I don't know how you do all of them without money and so forth. But I don't look at the election that just transpired as a great defeat for the Republicans. Obviously, it's not good, but Trump, who won the presidency fairly easily, lost Virginia by about 6 points. He lost New Jersey by about 6 points. There hasn't been a Republican elected mayor of New York City. I think there's been one, Giuliani, in 60 years since Lindsay. The Republican this time got 7%. Now, had Iowa or Ohio or a red state gone that way, I would say he's got real, real big problems. But I think it's probably overreacting that this one didn't turn out well, because, the candidates were good on both sides, Virginia and New Jersey. The Democrats elected, they seem to be solid people. So I don't look at it as that bad, although I concede that he lost the governor's race, they lost by bigger amounts than they did the presidential race.
Yeah, Joe, it was the margins, I think, that surprised a lot of people, or at least that was they weren't upsets, but they were more comfortable than they expected.
I know. I have a cousin in New Jersey that I talked to just a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact, and I said, what's going to happen? I was anxious about it, and she says, I don't know. 15 minutes later, I asked her the same question. She gives me the same answer. She was concerned because New Jersey had a kind of an awkward history of not going beyond two terms for a particular party, whether it be in the governor's office, whether it be Republican or Democrat. And it, nowadays you don't know what in the world is going on. So I agree. I think that the margins were surprising to me in both Virginia as well as in New Jersey.
I'd have to agree with Mike. I think that, New Jersey and Virginia are blue states. Ohio is very red. I think that, the national media likes to draw these big conclusions and, the day as soon as the polls close. But I don't know that it'll play out that way. It might be more impactful in states that are swing, like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, maybe.
Joe, looking at, Vivek Ramaswamy is a clear favorite in the governor's race, regardless of because of the nature of the state, regardless of who runs against him. But John Husted and Sherrod Brown, that's going to be a tighter race. Sherrod Brown has to be encouraged by these results, and particularly Virginia, I would say.
Yeah, I think so, because, that's kind of taking the page out of his playbook. He's always talked a lot about working people issues and how they're affected, the economy. That's where he likes to, talk on when he's on the campaign trail. And that seemed to be the talking points that were popular.
Mike, Ohio Democrats, I think, have a twofold problem. Number one is getting the people, the normal, traditional Democratic supporters, to get out and vote. Too many people in the cities fail to reach the numbers that we would like to see. And another thing is something that Mike and I have talked about for years, and that is the Democrats that have deflected to the Republican Party. Have they gotten tired of the MAGA experience and are now coming back? And if you combine both of those constituencies, I think that Sherrod Brown can easily get elected.
So, Mike, do 2026 Republicans in Ohio, do they closely align with President Trump, or do they try to separate themselves from him a little bit?
Well, I don't know that you do either. A year from now is a long time. We all know what can happen in politics. I think Trump is probably still, as we speak today, very strong in Ohio. So I think you take a danger and not lining up with him. But on the other hand, people who, generally speaking, are not Trumpsters really dislike him. I mean, it's not just a Republican-Democrat, I always vote Republican, I always vote Democrat. It's not that. A lot of people do dislike him, and I think if you get too close to him, unless he is really riding high in November of 26, it could be a mistake. So I think they'll look, as most politicians do, put their finger up to see which way the wind's blowing and react accordingly.
Joe, Republicans are going to tie Democrats to Mamdani, saying they're all socialists, and that's he's running the party now. That's what they're going to say.
Yeah, well, that might be a mistake, because if you look at who came out, in New York especially, it drew out a lot that race drew out a lot of young people, young adults. And these are the same people who say they can't afford a house. They say they're saddled with college debt that they didn't realize they were getting into. They say that they've got a lot of problems that are, you know, inherent to their generation. So if you've got that group coming out and that group is energized, it could make a big difference. I mean, just look, you know, in the 60s, young people were the ones that drew about the change. So, you know.
And polling shows that those people, that constituency, is not particularly spooked by the term socialist, as perhaps somebody of my generation or my parents' generation.
And he was very disciplined, Mondani was, on his message. Affordability, cost of living, everything. Whatever the question was, do the Jets, should they trade their quarterback? I don't know, but the cost of rent is too high, you know?
Yeah, and I think that disciplined message that focused on pocketbook issues really was something that sold the younger people in New York who are struggling to make ends meet. And, you know, Mondami managed to translate things into short, simple things like freeze the rent. It's not that hard. It's not a complicated policy. Now, it's complicated to actually implement that, but it's for the voters, they like the sound of it, and they said yes.
Yeah. Plus, the social media is the bomb. If you go into social media, there's like, you know, 10, 15-second takes, very, very short takes, explaining where he is on something, and that's really popular with a lot of especially younger users.
But doing it is was mentioned a minute ago, is so much different than promising. I mean, who would not be in favor, regardless of your political party, if you're living in New York and say, okay, we're going to give free bus rides, free transit, we're going to freeze this, we're going to freeze. I mean, it's all wonderful. Yeah. But how's he going to do it? It's not the most, the state and certainly the city, there's not a lot of blue ink, black ink there, you know, they're in trouble.
There's a long list of politicians who make promises that are not held. They're not
beginning kept. With Absolutely. Our president, and that's what one thing I think that we have learned in the Democratic Party is that it's okay if you're well-intentioned to make a promise, even though you may not have worked out the details yet.
Right, if the promises aren't fulfilled in the next year, that could hurt Democrats in 26. All right, for all the talk about voter anger about rising school and property taxes, voters approved most tax issues in Central Ohio. Olentangy School District voters approved higher taxes to build two schools. Westerville Schools voters approved higher income taxes. Franklin County voters easily approved levies for mental health services and the Columbus Zoo. Most township levies won. Only a police levy in Mifflin Township lost. A Jonathan Alder School District levy lost, but by just a dozen votes, and that heads to a recount. Lord Bischoff, we've heard over and over again, voters are really mad about property taxes, but they all voted for tax issues.
That's because they like good schools. They know the teachers of their kids and they want them to be paid appropriately. They like having a good zoo and libraries. The library millages statewide batting 900 on Tuesday. So people, you know, they like to have good government services.
Mm-hmm. So is that it? Property tax debate's over now, Joe?
Oh, no. No, it's not over. But, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. The property taxes that people vote on are for services that are closest to them, that affect their life in the closest way. And so, you know, at the state level, there's a lot of things that people don't have a say over. And, you know, when you're talking, you know, income tax at the state level, people say, oh, cut the taxes. But what they don't want is the state support coming out of the things that they like at the local level. And so we see that over and over. And now there's actually something that's trying to make it so that it's harder for libraries to be able to get taxation at the local level. And, you know, on the social media in my neighborhood, people were going gangbusters against that idea. And the sponsor of that plan is from my area, so.
And also in the past, because some of these levies have not succeeded just in recent memory, and the effect hasn't been good. And like Laura was saying, the high schools, the schools, are so important to the community. You know, they are like mini communities for the young people. And a lot of stuff is going on, a lot of visible stuff, and the parents want to support that.
But then when they get the tax bill, Mike, they're up in arms. I mean, how is it, where's the disconnect between a voter, I mean, a school that he passes by 10 or 12 points, but then lawmakers hear from people in that district or that city or that township saying, I'm paying too much in property taxes.
Well, Mike, I don't really know, but I suggest, or I think one of the real reasons is if you just take any section of the community, any precinct, and you break it down economically, money-wise, and the rates go up, and people at the lower end of the income spectrum are really badly hurt, and seniors. So many seniors living off limited income, and the rates keep going up, up, up. I don't know, maybe it's happened, but I don't ever remember my property taxes dropping. It only seems to go one way. And some of the older people, limited in income, I mean, it is not just a, you're upset, but it'll pass tomorrow. It really hurts them. And so I think that's where you get a lot of the complaints about them, and I totally understand it.
I lived in Florida for many years, and that's one of the things, one of the phenomenons of there, because once upon a time, there were lots and lots of retirees, maybe there still are, going down to Florida, except now the different balance. And they would always vote against the levies. They didn't have skin in the game. And that was the detriment of the communities. It wasn't good.
So Westerville, they went a different route. They voted to increase the income taxes, and retiree income is pretty much exempt from this for the most part. So, Laura, do you see other school districts doing this, going this way?
I think there's a couple of school districts that already have an income tax on the books. But, it's a way of saying, look, we want to support the schools, but we also recognize that retirees on fixed incomes can't afford to see these big constant increases in their property taxes.
Yeah, and it won 60-40, so it did really well.
It was pretty popular, yeah.
I think we will see more school districts in Ohio go the income tax route. That tax issue in Westerville was almost a complete 180 from when voters shot down a property tax levy for schools. My thanks to our panel, the USA Today Ohio Bureau's Laura Bischoff, Ohio Public Radio's Joe Ingles, Democrat Joe Moss, and Republican Michael Miller. We'll be right back.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snolligoster of the Week award, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This one is actually left over from the election. As we all know, many Ohioans are really mad about property taxes. They keep going up, and they keep going up fast because property values are going up fast, especially in quickly growing areas like Union County, that's just north and west of Columbus. Earlier this month, voters in the Jonathan Alder School District, which is in Union County in nearby Madison County, decided on a school levy to raise property taxes for the district. Well, the day before the election, voters in Union County started getting mail from the county treasurer, informing them that their property taxes were going up. It was part of a reassessment process that happens every 6 years. So again, this process happens every 6 years. And voters got word of sometimes big tax increases the day before they were being asked to raise those taxes some more. The levy lost by 12 votes. School supporters howled. They argued the mailing was a deliberate attempt to kill the levy. The Union County auditor told the Columbus Dispatch the figures in the letter were inaccurate and incomplete, and sending it out was completely wrong and unnecessary. Union County Treasurer Andrew Smara says he was just doing his job, and the timing of the letters was purely coincidental. Even if we take him at his word, that's a pretty shrewd coincidence. And for that, Union County Treasurer Andrew Smara gets our Snolligoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snolligoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Just tell your friends about us. That's the best way to spread the word about this podcast. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snolligoster from WOSU Public Media.